Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Thanks for coming today or staying where you are and being on. Yeah. Today I wanted to talk not about a case koan today, although it is a koan. The identity of relative and absolute, or the sandokai in Japanese. Okay, so I'll read it, and then maybe at the end, because there's so much in this, you could, if you're interested in a line, we could talk about it. And if you don't, I'll talk. Okay. The mind of the great sage of India was intimately conveyed from west to east. Among human beings are wise ones and fools, but in the way there is no northern or southern ancestor. The subtle source is clear and bright. The tributary streams flow through the darkness. To be attached to things is illusion. To encounter the absolute is not yet enlightenment. Each and all the subjective and objective spheres are related and, at the same time, independent. Related, yet working differently, though each keeps its own place. Form makes the character and appearance different. Sounds distinguish comfort and discomfort. The dark makes all words one. The brightness distinguishes good and bad phrases. The four elements return to their nature as a child to its mother. Fire is hot. Wind moves. Water is wet. Earth hard. Eyes see, ears hear. No smells. Tongue tastes. The salt and sour. Each is independent of the other. Cause and effect must return to the great reality. The words high and low are used relatively. Within light there is darkness, but do not try to understand that darkness. Within darkness there is light, but do not look for that light. Light and darkness are a pair, like the foot before and the foot behind in walking. Each thing has its own intrinsic value and is related to everything else in function and position. Ordinary life fits the absolute as a box and its lid. The absolute works together with the relative like two arrows meeting in midair. Reading words, you should grasp the great reality. Do not judge by any standards. If you do not see the way, you do not see it even as you walk on it. When you walk the way, it is not near, it is not far. If you are deluded, you are mountains and rivers away from it. I respectfully say to those who wish to be enlightened, do not waste your time by night or day. So, you know, at most Soto temples, this is chanted either in English or Japanese, or if you're in Holland, probably in Nederlander. And it's done on a daily basis. Why is that done? So it sinks in. You know, it's a little bit like koans. It's a bit like music, too. You do it over and over, it sinks in. There's just something about cadence that really helps us as a human being. There's a few things with this translation that should be explained because we went through some of these translations back in the year 2000. One of the reasons we didn't change the translations at that point was that we were trying to keep accord with all the other groups in the White Plum. Now everybody's gone their own way. Maybe we'll redo it. But It's kind of interesting. The first part of the first sentence is not really correct. It goes, the mind of the great sage of India was intimately conveyed from west to east. It actually is, the mind of the great sage of India is intimate west and east. So there's no conveying from one place to the other. That makes it a lot clearer. You know, historically, yeah, he went from India, China, Korea, Japan, the West in that way. But it's just like in terms of our own practices, it's here. It's intimate. It's the experience we're having at this moment in time, whether we believe it or not. It's like Master Rinzai would say, you know, students of today, what ails you? Lack of faith in yourself is what ails you. You go blundering around looking for all kinds of things and never be yourself. So he puts it in a different way, but it's the same thing. This mind of the great sage, you know, and this is, again, a tricky thing too, is that in the West, and I know for myself, as soon as that word mind is done, I think of head. I think of brain. You know, so it's not the head of Shakyamuni, it's not the brain of Shakyamuni, it's the mind, the direct experience. I remember talking with Maizumi Roshi once, and just talking about the transmission, and he said, you know, I'll be gone at some point. Is how do you see things? You know, and basically, I see them like this. You know, when he died, sure enough, I saw them like this. The transmission was there. The mind of Maizumi Roshi was easily experienced as the mountains, the rivers, the city. You know, same mind was left and continued. You know, that's also what we call the Tathagata. This Buddha's realization isn't owned by anybody. It's been this way since beginningless time. That's why we use that word Tathagata Buddha, or the one who's attained to thusness. Can we do that? Yeah, you know, that's the beauty of the practice, is we can do this. We are doing it. That's the thing that goes on. Now, some of the other things is that with this Shastra, I guess, well, it's not a commentary. Let's call it a sutra, even though it's not by the Buddha. It goes relative, absolute, relative, absolute, relative, absolute, relative, absolute, like walking, and where it says a bit later on, it's like the foot before and the foot behind in walking. Usually the way that we appreciate this world is that from the place that we stand, there's just one foot forward at a time as we walk. So we may appreciate the relative, and then we might appreciate the absolute, relative, absolute, relative, absolute. And he follows this kind of pattern all the way through here. I'm not going to go into it in detail, because really it's an overview, and it's fun to actually go into it and look at this for yourself. Now, Sekito Kisen, the guy that wrote that, is in our lineage, and he was the second successor after the sixth ancestor, Daiken Enno. So it went Seigen Gyoshi, Sekito Kisen, Yakusen Igen, Ungan Donjo, Tozan Ryoka. And the reason I'm mentioning Tozan is that basically he got hold of this piece of writing and formulated it into the Hokyo Zenmai, or the Dual Mirror Samadhi, and then later into the five ranks, or the five positions of either practice or realization in this way. So this is just a bit of background behind it. So this is one of the first pieces in China, really, to take off as a purely Chinese piece of writing, like the Six Ancestors Platform Sutra and the Xinxing Ming, which came before that. So it really has a good place in our living practice. Now, if you wish to me to address certain parts, let's take it that way. So let's just start off with that, because I don't really want to go through it line by line. If there's parts that really strike you, then we'll talk about that. So please raise your hand. Okay, Daniel. Great. So if you can come on.
Hi, Roshi.
Hi.
Hi, Roshi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Fine. Good seeing you.
Great. Thank you for bringing this up. I was wondering, could you say a little bit more about the line, to encounter the absolute is not yet enlightenment?
Yeah, I can.
I've always liked that line. Yeah. I was wondering if you could.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting. There's a couple of things. One is, in what is that encountering of the absolute? You know, for many of us, is that if we come from like a Judeo-Christian tradition, there's more of a sense of a feeling that God is around in one way or another, or the ungraspable, the unknown. You know, that embraces us on a momentary basis. At some point, you see that one's own story doesn't reach this aspect that is so vast and boundless. But it can be very objective. You can encounter that. I remember when that happened with me, as I remember I was sitting and I realized that the narrative that I told myself all my life just no longer propped everything up. There was something that was formless and empty that was my own body and mind, you know. Now, but that was objective. It was like watching something there. So it's an objective realization. Now, the important thing with that is that like some people will pick up on that and say, I've really attained something here. I know what that is, and then hold on to it, you know, like those Garfield cats on glass windows, you know, looking, and they'll stick with it. Look, I've got this. I know what this is, you know, and you know, there's no further to go with this, you know, but doesn't matter what you realize, is that you have to drop it. You have to let it go. And enter into one's daily life to the point where there is absorption and a loss of self in the midst of whatever is occurring. You know, just like Maizumi Roshi said to me with my Garfield moment, you know, I'm holding on. I had this great realization. He goes, even a drunk could have that, you know, okay, slink off, you know. Practice more, go deeper, and to the point where it's there's no need to hold on to that. You know, the so-called relative, all things are this absolute. There's not a division or a split there, and you experience that in all things. So, you know, why even bother? You know, it's like again, I'm using Master Rinzai because he's on the. And he's like, is in the other team basically from this one, and you know, he goes, why bother gouging holes in healthy flesh, you know? But as practitioners, we do that. We split things up, really trying to find out this thing called enlightenment. But he's going, you know, it's already integrated, you know. Live it, or as he says, grasp and use, never name. Just keep on immersing yourself in it. Don't have it be out there. And so, like in the Soto school and the Rinzai school, it's just like immerse, be, do. And if you practice that kind of unification in practice, you don't split up these things of relative and absolute. You know, so Sekido Kisen in many ways is gouging holes in this healthy flesh. But at the same time, what he's doing for anyone that recognizes these aspects in practice, he's putting out little flags. You know, this is a good place. You keep on going. Just go past this. And then you go to the next one, you know. And then And then also he's showing out the pitfalls. You know, don't go over there. Don't get stuck in the absolute on that side, or that observational sense of absolute. You know, so he's very compassionate, but people will read it and then they try and fit into that format rather than live your life and you'll see these flags. Get on with it. Yeah. Is that enough?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, oh, good. Well, it's never enough, but it was great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Good seeing you.
I'm just going to jump on. I just want to say for those that need to, that or want to look at the text of this, you can go to zmc.org under training, form and ceremony. And there's a link there in the text under service that says four basic sutras. And you can find it there. And how to raise your hand, Tom, if you pull up the participants window, if you're on a computer, there should be a link at the bottom, raise hand. And I think on a phone or a tablet, it's on the lower left. There
we
go.
Oh, we got three.
All right. So it looks like Shiro is up.
Okay. Either Shiro or Laurie.
Yeah. Hey, Roshi.
Yeah.
It was me. But,
yeah.
Hey, Daniel, it's nice to meet you. There's another Daniel here, and I actually was going to point to the same line, so there must be a Dan thing with that. In my own experience with that, it's like when I try to hang on to it, then it just all goes to hell. But which I think points to the other line, which I'm very attached to and very love in this sutra, which is the absolute works together with the relative, like two arrows being in the air.
Yeah.
And I just love the indescribable.
Yeah. Do you know where that comes from? You know that story. Have you heard the story?
No.
I think it was an archer called Zhi, if I get it right, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong because I don't speak Chinese, you know. And apparently he was this amazing archer, and, you know, he could just hit targets no matter what he was doing. And he had this student who was also really good, but the student at some point realized he would never be better than the master. So the master was off doing something at the other end of the field, and he goes, well, you know, if I kill him, I'll be the best. And so, and then the other guy immediately shoots an arrow back and knocks it out of the air, you know. So this is the relative and absolute aspect of it. But, you know, beyond skill, basically, it's beyond skill. No matter how much cultivation you do, it's here. You know, where it says the relative and absolute me is that they've never been separate, box and lid, you know, never been separate. So that's the beauty of that. It's beyond skill. It occurs. It's a bit like statements you'll see in, I think, in the Hokyo Zanmai, which is, again, a dual mirror samadhi that is basically a sister copy to this, where he goes, the stone man sings and the wooden man gets up to dance. Is that even though, you know, that's impossible in reality, it's just something changes in oneself. Is that woodenness drops off and then there you are. You're functioning freely. It's not a problem. But it has to go with that element of doing it over and over until it breaks open. And that's one of the, you know, that's one of the pieces of advice I would give to people is don't judge how you're doing, just do it. And then at some point it works. You know, I just remember, you know, this 12-year-old would practice cello every day for 10 minutes. And I was going, wait a minute, I can do that too, you know, but with a guitar. And it was one of the greatest things. And even just doing it that 10 minutes, then I became better at doing what I was doing. And it's the same with practice. Don't judge, well, it's no good today because I've just eaten. It's no good today because samadhi's not strong. It's no good today because I'm tired, you know. No, it's just, well, this is how I am now. Practice, you know. But in time, that's what happens. It just naturally unfolds as your life. And again, that's the essence of Soto practice. Just do it. And then life naturally unfolds. If you don't practice in that way, then what tends to happen is we tend to get involved in all kinds of thoughts, which then become barriers. You know, it's like they talk about the thicket of briars. We just get so, you get frozen. Oh, I can't do that. I can't. But the other thing is, this is the way it is now. How do I practice in the midst of it? It's much better. But how? It doesn't mean practice is a certain way. How do I practice in the midst of it?
Thank you.
It's,
Tom.
Hey, Tom. Mr. Boynton, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
I want to just say thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is such a special thing for me. I just love my Sundays.
Good.
You suggested I read Red Pine's book on Heart Sutra, and I have just loved that. Just love that. Now, you don't call this piece a sutra?
Technically, the sutras are just the Buddhas.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's not a negative thing in that way, but people use it loosely, and that's the way we do it, so it's fine. You know, I mean, it's a great piece of writing.
It's beautiful. I love it. Would I be lucky enough to have a Red Pines book about that? This?
I don't know. Would you be lucky enough? I don't have one. Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying, you know, if Red Pines writes a book about this sutra.
Yeah. But what about it? Would you? I don't get the question.
No, I wondered, Red Pines is the author of that book you suggested. Does he author anything about this particular sutra?
You know, I really don't know. I only know about that one book, you know.
Yeah. It's fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you.
And
good.
I'll let you go, boss.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Rich.
Rich.
I'm just trying to unmute. Hi, Roshi.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. The one question I guess I've always had with this is towards the beginning, they say, Sekhito Kisen says, the subtle source is clear and bright. The tributary streams flow through the darkness.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was kind of backwards. Okay. And I just wonder what you mean by that.
In San Francisco, they use the branching streams. So that, you know, that might be a little bit more accurate. But the thing is, like, each one of us, we have our own root. We're all joined together with this darkness, this vastness, this, you know, realization that occurs, but we go our own way. You know, that's one of the tricky things. I mean, we see this in our society too. You know, we have human being and the tremendous diversity in that. But anyone that gets control or power, they try and put restrictions in there and channel things. You know, we've always got to watch. We've got to really watch out for that because intrinsically we're free. We can go in any direction. But as soon as those criteria come in, the channels start to occur. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's the same in practice. It's not we're practicing something. We're practicing living in itself. It's very broad. You know, I spent years aiming towards realizing something. It's like when we use the word enlightenment. Enlightenment implies that it's not a fixed state. It's a process. You know? So shedding light on or as, that's the process. And there's no way you can value that. You can't look at it from the outside. It's ongoing. It's the one who sees through these eyes, hears through these ears. So, yeah. And then, you know, the darkness is kind of interesting. Is that, have you ever been outside or even inside when it's just pitch black? I mean, there's no way of adding criteria. You know, it's an amazing thing. But at the same time, all the streams, all the trees, everything's moving in it of its own accord. It's just an amazing thing. You don't need criteria many times. But in our lives, yep, we got to make sure that we got enough money in the bank so that they don't overcharge, you know, for overdrafts and all that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of criteria you've got to follow, but it's very important to remember that basic criteria that unites us all, you know, including animals, plants, sky, earth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you much, Roger.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Anne?
Okay, we've got...
Yeah, we'll go Ron.
We'll go Ron. Ron, you're on.
Hey.
Yeah, you jumped the queue.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole section in there about darkness and light.
Yeah.
You know, don't try to understand the darkness, but don't look for the light. And
yeah.
I'm just wondering if the darkness, we're not talking about colors here. I wonder if this is just another metaphor for relative and absolute.
Yeah, exactly. It's one we can understand, you know. It's just like at night, you may see light. In the day, there's also darkness, the shadow. There's all kinds of things. But the important thing is don't try and superimpose one over the other when it's not here. In the daylight, experience the day as it is. And it's like with enlightenment, is rather than looking for something else called enlightenment and objectifying it, that's the problem. So when you're experiencing this, experience it thoroughly. When darkness comes, experience that thoroughly. Don't create a shadow with those things or something else. Don't split it up. That's delusion in itself, splitting up.
So even to split it into darkness and light is splitting it up.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's this. I mean, there's no way of splitting those things up. Arbitrarily, we look and, yeah, there is darkness. But it more than likely, it won't come till tonight. Ron, do you realize the Buddha is looking over your shoulder?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I actually put him there.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Don't let him get too far away.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Thanks, Ron. Anne.
Hey, Anne.
Unmute.
Anne Bao?
Oops. All right, we'll go to Anyo. There you go.
There you go.
I've often wondered if the phrase mountain and rivers has some subtle meaning to it. You know, the Zen Mountain Monastery uses it as the name of their order. Does it have something subtle about it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're deluded, you know, or you're practicing delusion. In other words, here you are, and you're thinking you should be elsewhere. That's basic delusion. Then you're a long way away, basically, in your own mind. If you're splitting yourself up, just like a mountain usually is pretty big, and it's going to take some time. That kind of feeling behind it.
I'd also like to recommend Kagan's book,
Top Gun Zen.
Top Gun Zen about identity and
thank you. Yeah, push Kagan's book.
Yeah, it is great. I just love it. I'm gonna reread it one of these days.
Kagan is one of my successors, and he teaches in San Diego, and he was a Top Gun pilot. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I've heard him speaking.
Very good. I was just pushing it to everybody else. That's all I was doing.
Oh, sure. Of course.
They may not know in that respect. Yeah. Good. Okay. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Anyo? There we go. Good morning. Thank you. As all. We are being messed with when he says, reading words, you should grasp the great reality.
Yeah.
We're grasping the reality, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
That's that's the doing of it.
Yeah.
Reading words, we could be reading words, we could be bicycling down the road.
Yeah. Okay, we'll just transfer that into music now. Is the music the notes?
No.
Okay, then grasp that reality. Yeah.
But it's kind of messing. It's a kind of fun joke, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, we like events. We like writings. We like all of those things. They're there to stimulate us into seeing the world in a different way. But if we just like the writings, then we're stuck on that, and that's the problem. Yeah. I mean, all of these things is that they didn't really mean much to me until I started to see, oh, that's about my life. That's about this aspect of my life. You know, at first it's just like you chant things and it's what the heck are they talking about, you know, and then it begins to sink in because it gets that practice aspect of us sort of awake, and then it starts to, we start to see what they're saying. But again, you know, it's just like with any analogy, it takes some time to penetrate. Some are simple, some are a lot more difficult in that way. But it's always important to do that translation between the writing and ourselves. That's the hardest part of translation. You can have a very accurate translation, but if we don't translate it here, it doesn't mean much.
Maybe transport it here.
Yeah. Trying to think of another trans, but I can't. I can't think much. Yeah. It's the end of the week for me. Words don't come.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Oh, I guess you're all done now. Is that it?
Thanks, Anya. Rob. Rob's unmuted.
Rob?
Maybe he doesn't.
Okay. Maybe he doesn't know he's unmuted. Okay, well, I guess nobody's raising their hands. Okay, so then within this sutra, there's also some history too, where and they're basically talking about ways of practice that were occurring in China around about the time of the sixth ancestor, and for the next, you know, probably a couple of hundred years, even though some of that's come down to today, which is like, but in the way, there is no northern or southern ancestor. Now, the southern school of Buddhism was the school of Daiken Enno, or the sixth ancestor. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't very erudite. He was just very practical. Apparently, he was a woodcutter. And he lived basically and supported himself cutting wood, and supported him and his mom. The person that was the head of the northern school was it Shen Wei, I think. Close to that anyway. No, yeah, and he was very very erudite. He was very educated, and apparently the two of them went to the same monastery. And I think under Hongjian, if I remember rightly. Anyway, it's good enough. You know, it's good enough. And apparently the Hongjian found that the sixth ancestor had a lot of potential. But because he was like a southerner, actually probably from Vietnam, and regarded as a barbarian, that he would sort of keep him off to one side, so he put him in the rice preparing shed, where they would winnow the rice and sift it, so that obviously the food would be good for the monastery. And now Hongjian was the head monk, the other guy, Shen Hui, whatever his name was, and Hongjian was about to die, and he said, you know, I want you to do a poem. Anyone can do it. And the one who actually wins the poetry contest will be the next ancestor of this temple. And so the head monk does a poem about mirrors and stands, etc., and about practice. Daiken Enno comes along, and he goes, "What's the poem say?" He's illiterate. And so somebody reads him out the poem, and he goes, "Well, that doesn't seem quite right. You know, the mind isn't a mirror. There is no stand on which it rests. You know, there's no need to clean it, you know, and it's here intrinsically moment by moment." And so then he goes, "Will you write this for me on this bulletin board?" And so he does, and he puts it up, and the fifth ancestor says, "Wow, who wrote this?" And he goes, "Well, it's the guy in the rice shed, you know, the layman in the rice shed, and who's there." And so he goes off to see him, and he goes, come off to my place at midnight, and I just want to tell you a few things." So he goes in there, and he goes, "Basically, you've got really good understanding." I just gave him a few more testing questions and said, "Okay, you got the transmission, but don't stay around here. Go. Because people really don't like foreigners in this place, especially lay foreigners. So I'm going to give you the robe and bowl, and get away from here as fast as you can." And so, now this is the beauty of the fifth ancestor. He wasn't bothered about one, age, because apparently he was only about 18, 19, something like that. Two, he didn't mind about class, which was a big thing in China at that point. You know, you had to be of a certain class, a priestly class or whatever. You didn't have to be ordained, according to him. It's that direct insight. It's the application that occurred. Again, crossing all of these boundaries that were there. And he said, "Look, be very careful. Don't teach for 10 years. Nobody will take you seriously because you're too young. That happens in our society, you know." So he goes away. Now, obviously, the head monk was kind of annoyed about this because, you know, he's promoting practice. He's promoting cultivation. He's promoting all of these things that are traditional in monasteries in China at that time. And so this sort of schism begins to open up. It's not a matter of cultivation, which is the northern school. And the southern school goes, "Well, this is instant enlightenment, you know, immediate realization, you know, beyond, you know, words and phrases, etc., as it's defined as." And so this schism begins to open up in terms of practice. It should never be there, because both of these are important, both of these sides. And so this is why in the Sandokai, the identity of relative and absolute, Sekito Kisen said, "But in the way," and now when it's not the way outside of who you are, it is the way of who and what you are as a awakened person. It's not split up into sudden or gradual or practice realization. These things it is directly as you are. And then, you know, he sort of goes on with this. So, okay, this is the way. And then he goes, your direct realization, this source that you are, is clear and bright. It's always here as your life. Again, the one who sees through these eyes, hears through these ears. It's not your history. It's not how you describe yourself as being close or far or whatever. It's constantly here, moment by moment. And then we go our own ways, just like the sixth ancestor went his own way. And, you know, he went on, did his 10 years in the city, came back, got ordained, started teaching, followed his teacher's wishes in that way. And then, you know, it goes on. He goes, to be attached to things is illusion. Is that true? You can nod your head. Or is it true? Can you really be attached to things? Do they come and go? You know, but again, as human beings, this is one of the main things that causes us suffering. It's like the Buddha said, you know, suffering is caused by attachment and aversion. We try and avoid the reality of whatever's going on. Our minds dwell in comfort zones rather than seeing things as they are and moving in accord with. And then we talked about the next line, to encounter the absolute is not yet enlightenment. This keeping on going. It's like in the Heart Sutra, you know, this is directly talking to the line in the Heart Sutra where it goes, gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha. Going, going, gone beyond, always going beyond the other shore. Whoopee! So, you know, and that whoopee is important, is that this is life. This is life. Enjoy it. You know? I mean, it's a very cheerful kind of thing, you know. Not every day I can say whoopee, but it's a good thing to remember. And then, you know, it goes on. You know, again, this is... talking, this is really, in many ways, this is talking about our society today. Each and all the subject and objective spheres are related and at the same time independent. Just look at now how we're trying to, or say the people in power are trying to split things up. Like they're unrelated in some ways. You know, it's everybody else's fault over there. We're fine. We're not related to that. And again, these are the paths that really create suffering in our own society. You know, you could see that with the National Socialists in Germany in the 1920s and 30s. You start to split up society, then you can concentrate power. But when you concentrate power, then you disenfranchise everybody around you. You create people as under people. Then you can disempower them. You can kill them according to your own way. But at the same time, we're all connected. How we live together, we're all connected. If you can see that basic sphere that's there, and this is the real strength of Buddhism. If you see that unifying sphere right at the beginning, it's a lot more difficult to draw those lines. You know, because you see that basis. That's why Buddhism is so relevant in today's, you know, in today's date and time. It's not a matter of cause of following conventions or being a Buddhist. It's seeing that basic nature which is there. That's the main thing that Buddhism's got going for it right from the beginning. You know, but it's the same thing. You know, it's like with government. You know, there's governance. There's finances. There's social programs. There's taking care of the environment. All of these things need to be unified and brought forward. If we specifically then just focus on one, the others don't get taken care of. And that's, you know, that's why we have governments. So for us as human beings, it's very important to be able to enter into all of these different spheres and take care of those spheres. It's not about just being a specialist. And it's like that with practice. You know, it's like I was talking last week to one of you guys, I think it was Omar, just saying what's in practice. It's not about just realizing something and holding on to it. It's once that thing is realized, then it's carrying it into all these different spheres. Traditionally in monasteries and training centers, you know, maybe you'll be on doing altars. And then after that, maybe then you'll go on to cooking. And then you do that for 6 months, a year. Then you'll be on to maintenance and building. Then beyond that, then maybe you'll be in administration. So that in time you see that no sphere, there is no sphere where practice doesn't occur. There is no place where... your own light doesn't shine. And there's no excuse for not being who you are momentarily. And then beyond that, you know, there's leadership and leading others and helping others in many different ways. So, you know, it's just like in living is that there are all of these spheres, and it's important to pay attention to them. Even if you think it's under you or above you, is enter into those spheres and then you learn something. And you become very broad in terms of living along those lines. Anyway, we'll see if there's any questions up to this point. And then I'll talk more. I want to include you, you know, because we chant this every day. And many of you do this.
There's a question in chat here. Roshi, can you relate this to Dongshan's five ranks? Maybe another talk. Shogun.
It is a precursor to those five ranks. To do it any justice, it would have to be a different talk, you know, really on this. But they are available in, you know, it can't, you know, they're available within this identity of relative and absolute. Okay.
Dan and Laurie.
Dan, again.
That's actually me.
All right.
I have a question, Laurie. About what you, yes, hi, mm-hmm. Thank you for this. This is fantastic. I love this. You were just talking about spheres and, you know, that we need to be ourselves fully in each sphere. And I'm just really present to how that's not always possible in a world that doesn't accept you for who you are. And so, so each sphere actually has to be, you have to spend some time being very skillful in how you are present in some spheres.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, if it's a person of conflict situation, I mean, if you're gay in a white, in a straight world, I mean, there are so many places where that's very difficult.
Yeah.
And so it's, or if you're, let's say you're an artist and, you know, the only measure of an artist is success, you know, anything really.
Yeah.
There are so many places. I mean, I'm 67. I've done a lot of stuff. And I can tell you all the spirit, and I've done as many, dropped into the spheres of mind.
Yeah.
Still looking for more.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult. It's really, really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, is that's where we grow, in the difficulty.
That's why I don't talk, because I just can't.
Yeah. You know, and again, everybody's different, you know, but again, is that being able to walk in somebody's shoes for a while is a great thing. You know, I mean, that's in the Native American tradition. It's in, you know, I mean, I just remember my grandfather, you know, who is Irish, you know, he would say, be kind to people on the way up because you might meet them on the way down. You know, there's that knowing is that see people as they are and learn from them in whatever ways, you know, because nowadays there's, you know, there's so much baggage that goes with status. You know, but that's a human creation, and that's another aspect of practice is seeing, well, is this really true what I'm putting out here? Mm-hmm. And then you know, once I can see that as a fabrication, either from the way I'm conditioned or from my own introduction, then it becomes a lot easier to deal with that circumstance and situation, even if it seems impossible. Is that if that work's been done, it's a lot easier to enter into it then.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think also being sensitive to all of the relative things that have to be sort of conquered or gotten used to or in some way neutralized in the different spheres or, you know, things that someone may
conquer it, conquer and neutralize. I'd rather make friends personally.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
That's the most important thing, to make friends with your environment and all of it. And so to put your sensitivity outside of yourself and actually to really be sensitive to others.
I think it's
the biggest lesson that I've learned.
Yeah, and obviously to be able to learn vicariously too, you know, in both ways. I mean, one of them is that you see how things work and go, well, I could do that, or I will never do that, you know, because it's just, that doesn't work, you know. And it's important to see that. I mean, just in terms of practice, many people think that, well, I don't like the way that that teacher's teaching. It's going, well, I probably wouldn't do that, but I can learn from that as a, you know, I wouldn't do that. So therefore, I'm glad that he's doing it because I don't need to do it, you know, in that way. So all the time there's that learning,
yes,
that's going on. And again, with everybody, they come as a package. So there's beautiful things you learn. You learn the negatives too. But for me, it's important not to dwell on those negatives.
Yeah, that's what you I know, wanted to say.
And then put separation there because that's the way they are. No, that's part of them as a human being.
Yeah, so that's actually a wonderful place to build compassion. Is you know, being, well, I'm never going to go there, but actually I understand what's happening in this experience.
Yeah.
And I have compassion for it because I can see myself there. I mean, why else would I be looking at this, right?
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Thanks. I mean, there's so much in it, you know. I mean, that's the thing is that it's a very condensed piece of writing, but if you can take it in closer, or you can extrapolate it further out with, you know, with the society, and it's all there.
It's amazing. Never stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks, Laurie. There's a question in chat from Stefan. The relative is the relative and the absolute is the absolute. What is meant by identity? How are they
as a fact. Identified? Yeah, they are as a fact. They are, you know, it's kind of absolute and relative, the identity, the fact of relative and absolute, basically as one thing. You can separate them, you know, but at the same time, it's one thing. It's like, I'm a human being. Say that's the absolute, but I'm also a man. You don't separate the two. They appear as the same thing. And it's the same thing is that you can see that divinity. And when I say divinity, I mean ungraspable. You cannot grasp it. You can't tie it down. You can't categorize it. That's in, you know, that's my own experience. But at the same time, relatively, there's all of these different actions, activities that occur, views, all of those things are part and parcel of this absolute experience that occurs. As human beings, you know, we like to split things up just like God and creations. But being a creation, God is also what we are on a momentary basis. You know, the one who looks through these eyes that can't be tied down. It doesn't mean that he's got a religious story behind her, him, whoever you want to attribute that to, but that divinity is our basic birthright. You know, the one that manimates the meat puppet. You know, it's that is occurring on a momentary basis. And that's one of the you know, the things that that bugs me about religion is that God is very busy, and we always want him to save us. You know, why don't we do some of the saving and take some of the workload off him? Her. Hey? Why not? Why take our part of divinity? We've got that same, you know, meat puppet movements. You know, use it. Help. Do. Anyway, sorry, carry on. What are we up to? The absolute is the absolute. Yeah. I mean, these are positions you're putting in. When you're in that position, then, you know, you can talk about that. Well, actually, you can't. the relative is the relative. Can't help being, anyway, I really don't want to get into that. It's worthwhile doing a separate talk on that at some point, but not next week.
What is this? OED?
OED, identity, the fact.
The fact of being who or what a person or thing is.
Yeah, that's who we are, And you can, you know, temporarily. You can look at it from different perspectives, basically. But that's not the reality. That's what we do as human beings. We split ourselves up. But then we take it as being real, but it's not. Okay, how are we doing?
6 minutes.
No, I meant
no for hands.
No hands. Come on.
Get in the book. Oh, Oxford English Dictionary, OED.
Oh, okay, thanks. I didn't know OED. It's like OCD or something.
I wouldn't, Omar.
Okay, Omar, carry on.
Hey, so I remember this story that I really like by Jorge Luis Borges.
Yeah.
Argentine writer. And
he
has a story called The Library of Babel. And as I'm reading this verse here, the dark makes all words one. The brightness distinguishes good and bad phrases. It sort of makes me think of the unity between those two concepts of dark and bright, and how the final verse here says, don't waste your time by night or day.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the Library of Babel, in a way, sort of, to explain it very simply, it's a library where there's almost infinite hexagonal rooms, each one leading to the other, and every possible volume of 410-page books are represented on the shelves, including every possible book with one misspelled word, two misspelled words, three misspelled, et cetera, right? And how at the end of the story for me, the point is almost about the unity of that space as an inspirational space or as a space in which you can potentially see that absolutely everything can be generated, absolutely anything can be generated, and that we don't really even have to focus too much on what the particular volume is, what the particular thing is. So I'm wondering if that parallel that I'm drawing in my mind between those two things makes any sense. If it makes sense to think about the unity of all of these volumes, the unity of all these texts, and not the separate pieces.
Yeah, I mean, the piece itself is going, yes, there is the relativity of our life and there is the unity. And those things appear in each thing that occurs on a momentary basis. We are the space that can move into any of these things. We are the creativity that can create something from nothing right from the beginning. Our environment is in the same position in that way. It's like, you know, it's like with the library itself, there's so many ways of looking at this world, and those that library is maybe like each person is a book and they present themselves as that book with the mistakes, with each of those great attributes and inspiring words that come out. But ultimately, there's still the space that includes all of that. And even if the library was burned, like at Alexandria, the space still exists. And that's our life, you know, but we forget, we get so narrowed down by our own self-description that we forget that spaciousness and the creativity that occurs, you know?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Just to give you one more little quote that I have here in front of me, I believe it's from a text called The Total Library. Borges writes, a half dozen monkeys provided with typewriters would in a few eternities produce all the books in the British Museum. That gave me a chuckle. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for the quote.
Thanks, Omar. I don't see any other questions at this time.
Okay. Well, that's it, actually. That's 12:30.
Good timing.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody.